Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the newest edition of The Podyssey. Incredibly, it's been a month. How is everybody? Hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Before we go any further, some sad news today for us and our listeners. Roberto and Nicholas, we have a Judas in our midst.
Wow, this is not how I thought this would go at all.
No, joking aside, very sad. Sam is leaving The Odyssey for Pastures New, which means you may no longer be regularly with us in the studio.
Very, very sad.
Very sad. You'll be much missed, but we are determined to make your final Podyssey as bang average and okay as every other one we've produced.
Yeah.
So that's our gift to you.
Gotta be consistent.
Thank you.
We're gonna miss you, Sam. You're gonna miss doing the Podyssey with us.
It's such a joy. I've loved doing it so much. I can't even remember. Well, it's been at least a year.
Honestly,
I started. I think
you joined on a Halloween episode. I remember because I was. It wasn't in the studio. I think we were. I was in Derby, I think. Recording.
Oh, did we do it from home?
Oh yeah, that horrible one we did from home.
That was tough, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh god, yeah, that was bad. So look, we've things have gone up. Things have only improved since then. That's great. But Sam, you'll be much missed. Nicholas, how are you?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm well. I'm just training on things as a supervisor. I was saying to you, it's been okay. Like it's a bit of a lull at the moment. However, I feel like we're really going to get into the swing of things when these new blockbusters come out at the end of the month.
Yeah, some good stuff coming up, which obviously we'll talk about. I should tell the listeners at home as well that Nicholas is sporting a very smart moustache today, which I'm a big fan of. Looking good on you.
It's me.
Got the cult, they got the red.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
looking very good.
Do you have that? We've got Super Mario Galaxy coming for the Odyssey. So there
you go. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you my view on it as much as I can without damaging Dickens House at the Odyssey. Roberto, how are
one
you?
Screen in, so it's fine.
Roberto, are you good?
Yeah, I've been good. Yeah. I've been projecting. Yeah, I've been kind of preparing for Sam's leaving. You know, we do all the sketch stuff on the Instagram together. Mm. So we're kind of cooking up a little a farewell for that. But in the meantime, go see. So one of Sam's best performances for the Akira sketch that we did, in my opinion.
Thank you so much.
Great little. It's only a short clip, but it's a great performance.
Well, Sam, you're going to be much missed. And excitingly, us four off for some leaving drinks for you after this is recorded. So this might be a short version. It won't really. Right. So in terms of what's been going on, there's not been tons of films about, but you mentioned Mario Galaxy, which I know you've got coming up. I went to see this with Freddie. Mm-hmm. Okay, so first things first, he loved it.
Okay.
You know, so did its job.
Yeah.
You know how the Pixar ones give a little something for the adults as well, and there's something there for you? There is not much here if you're not a six-year-old boy. It's just like loads of bangs, loads of colour.
Have you played a Mario game?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I like the world of it, but it's not really a story. And it's just, a lot of kind of loud bangs and stuff. But, fine. He genuinely loved it, as did his cousin Arthur. So,
it's the audience. Sorted there.
Perfect.
Did it make sense when the character of Fox McCloud, who I'm sure you remember, Neil, showed up, played by Glenn Powell?
Well, he was a great character and great casting for Glenn Powell. I don't remember him at all. I didn't know who he was or why he appeared. But I did enjoy him.
It's very random.
Why he appeared is a different thing entirely. That's just like business strategy to the max.
Because he's not from Mario, is he not?
It's like his own... They've crossed over in Super Smash Bros. And now the listeners are looking to seeing how nerdy I am. But no, Star Fox is its own game franchise.
Oh, they just
guess what? Star Fox is in the new Mario Galaxy film. Not a spoiler. It was in the marketing. So
there's going to be a film with him, basically.
Probably. Maybe even a Super Smash Bros. Film
they'd
at some point.
Literally just unveiled a new Star Fox game as well. Not to go into the games,
but it was fun enough. Jack Black's always good value. Mario Johnson Power. But anyway, what have you boys enjoyed in the last few weeks?
I've been kind of catching up on some films from earlier this year that I hadn't got a chance to see yet. I watched 28 Years Later, Bone Temple, the new one.
What's it like? I'm fascinated by this.
It was really, really good.
I heard it's mad.
It is pretty mad. It's very horrible. Probably the most horrible out of all of them. There's not a lot of zombie stuff going on. It's really just some awful people just, you know, tearing each other.
This is the Jimmys led by Jack Connell.
Yes. Yeah.
Who dresses Jimmy Savile and kills zombies, but they kill zombies in such a way that you almost feel like they're the baddies.
Yeah. They're kind of like jumping around like Power Rangers and taking real glee in just killing zombies willy-nilly. You know, actually, these guys just, they can get eaten as well. That would be great.
They appeared at the very end of the last one, the 28 Years Later with Ralph Fiennes in it.
Yeah.
And it was such a kind of, I guess it makes sense now you've watched that one, but it was such a mad add-on to what was basically a pretty sensible film with a beginning, middle and end. And then suddenly they appeared at the very end and absolutely went mad on it.
It's a real tonal gear shift.
Yeah.
I think the film is really, really good. Definitely worth finding. It didn't really do very well at the box office or anything, but I think it deserved better.
The initial plan, I think, was 3 films, which I'm not sure they'll do a third. But that's why you saw the Jimmys at the end of the first, is to say, like, there's a second one coming.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 6 months after that first one came out.
Yeah.
Now they're not really sure because of box office gross if the third one will come out.
Well, they were also, it's probably the reason I've not seen it, they were very, very honest and explicit about what was in this new one, saying if you enjoy the other ones, you won't necessarily enjoy this one. I don't know, they were quite kind of brazen about it's going to be different and pretty horrible.
Yeah, I think it really worked for me though, and I think Ralph Fiennes and Jack O'Connell have this like scene together in the middle of the film that like really... kind of speaks to the power of those films of like where, you know, it's about the zombies, but also the humanity within the stories is actually really, really great as well. Oh. So I'm with you on that. I really enjoyed 28 Years Later, Bone Temple.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nicholas, what have you been up to? What you watched?
Just last night I rewatched Project Hail Mary.
Nice.
That has to be on like top tens. I mean, so just to continue that, top tens of like the best of 2026 already. Because the first watch I was like, you know, just really just trying to gauge what's going on and trying to follow the plot. But the second watch, you really like sink into the characters in the dialogue. And I think I've said this before on another policy, but really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to watch it again in some other way. Hopefully in IMAX. I haven't seen it on IMAX, but it's just begs to be seen on the biggest screen possible. And Ryan Gosling's like great.
As we discussed many times on this pod, he's just so watchable, isn't he?
He gives a really good performance in that film. I also have seen that since the last policy, and that's also, that's easily one of probably my favourite film of the year so far. It really put a very sincere smile on my face for like most of it. And that's very hard for a film to do nowadays, especially like a big blockbuster. I feel like, you know, we're lacking in that sincerity in Project Hail Mary.
From the first minute. It's not even a really like a thing where it progressively, it does progress in a way of like enjoyment, I think, for me. But I think Ryan Gosling's charisma like protrudes quite easily like from second one. And you just love the character, and you love Rocky as well, who's like also a puppet. So, you know, there's someone behind, there's actual person behind that as well. Voicing the actual voice of the, you know, like I thought it was just, like, genuinely just thought it was an AI.
Oh, Yeah.
What, is someone putting on the voice? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know.
Well,
that.
I'm guessing, you know, most people would have to record a voice for that sort of thing anyway. But yeah, to actually find out it was the puppeteer who also voiced the puppet, it's like, oh, wow, that's a great performance, actually.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
good
worth
stuff.
Watching if you haven't seen it.
Can people still come along and see it? I feel like there's a few afternoon shines and stuff going on. Yeah. A
couple more screenings, I think, throughout the rest of May. Maybe into June as well.
Into June, I believe, as well, yeah.
All right, nice. So in that case, we'll have a little break there. And then we're going to talk about some of the big films coming up, including Michael, which has prompted us to have a little watch along of another biopic of a megastar, which was Rocket Man. We've all had a look at that. Mm-hmm. Got some views on it, as I'm sure you boys do. So we will see you again in part two. Welcome to part two of the Podyssey, which is going to be a thriller because we are talking about the new Michael, the new Michael Jackson film. And we'll also be talking about Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic, which we watched kind of in preparation for watching the Michael one. First of all, let's talk about this Michael Jackson film. It's just like everything he does, going to be insanely popular, almost, because I've seen like some really, really damning reviews.
Yeah.
You know, kind of one starry type reviews. But regardless, people are going to see this across the world in their absolute millions. They've ignored any of the more controversial sides of Michael Jackson. It stops before any of that allegedly occurs, which is kind of obvious, but also kind of an interesting choice because that's so in the public domain, right? Yeah. So they're kind of asking outside of his fan base, which does run into the millions and millions and millions, they're asking us normal people who possibly quite like him, think that's a bit weird. They're asking quite a lot of us to completely just park that and go and see it with him represented as almost a kind of Jesus-y type second coming figure. But anyway, let's not be like the Daily Mail and talk about stuff we haven't seen. Let's talk to a man who has seen it. Nick, you have seen Michael.
Yeah.
Please tell us all about it. How do you think?
Right, so yeah, you're right. It avoids a lot of his sort of crimes and allegations.
Moonwalks carefully around it.
Yeah, of course. So it presents Michael as sort of this wounded sort of boy from his childhood, having worked the circuit, the music circuits with his brothers up until his solo career, into the middle of his solo career. Actually stops in 1988.
Okay.
Which is as that sort of, I suppose, was beginning to happen.
What's the significance of the stop? Like what, you know, because there's normally like a reason for, so is that like when like Thriller comes out or something?
Bad
or
comes
Bad
out.
Comes out?
Yeah, so the, okay. I mean, spoilers, whatever. It stops at Bad, the song Bad.
Right.
And he's on tour and he's performing Bad to the Wembley crowd because he had that London show. But besides that, there may be a part two to it all.
Cool.
Because I believe, having read a bit about the production and development of it, that they had a script with everything up to his death included in it.
Interesting.
And it went through multiple rewrites. It's been in, you know, a lot, as with most films, it's been in development for decades, you know, since he is such an important figure in culture. So who's to say, I mean, they will release. If they have a part two written, it's going to be released, no matter if it is,
because also this one will do crazy work.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, already.
I mean, it's been open for what, 2 weeks? It's made over like $500 million.
Jeez, yeah.
He's like, and this is, I wouldn't say like he's my king of pop, but you know, he is that very much.
Yeah,
a lot of people. Everyone's seen or at least most people have seen the viral reactions of people literally moonwalking and doing his dance moves.
Yeah,
that's my favorite aspect.
Somewhere in India, or like, you know, in America.
He's like a proper like global star as well. And I do get the challenge with telling the story, right? Because there is two halves to it. Mm. There's the kind of mad, tabloidy, had a lot of work done, lives in Neverland, rumours circling. You know, there is the bit when he's older and is clearly got so rich and so famous that he's candidly gone mad. Mm. But there is also the early bit where he was like the most famous bloke on the planet. He's in a gang of like him, Elvis, the Beatles, Madonna. You know, he's in a tiny gang of like global, everybody on earth knows their music.
And this is not an excuse, but also like physically abused, mentally abused by his father and his family, well, at least his father, towards, you know, getting into music. So it's a lot of like things to, I suppose, unravel in that respect when you watch the film.
Good film?
I enjoyed the film because I enjoy the music.
The guy who plays him actually is crazy good.
Is it his nephew?
Because he, like, I saw the poster and I was like, oh man, they've got actual Michael Jackson on the poster. And I looked again and I was like, no, it's not him. That's crazy. The likeness is mad, isn't it?
It's pretty. And the voice actually as well is quite eerie. I saw the trailer yesterday. I was like,
it is quite eerie.
The voice and the choreography, like to do the choreography is impressive, very impressive.
Yeah, I definitely will go and see it. I've got slightly mixed feelings about it, but I will definitely go and see it. But good film, you reckon?
I gave it like 3 out of 5.
Yeah, okay.
It's an average sit in your chair popcorn movie.
And also, there is an element to this, isn't there, where like not everything on Earth necessarily has to be deep and dark and expose. So the reason, like, for example, Bohemian Rhapsody was so popular, no sensible person watching that, or even the Straight Outta Compton, the NWA film.
Yeah.
Nobody watching that thinks that is absolutely on the money. They were the heroes of every single scene of their life and changed the world of music with no bad behaviour at all in between. But it is nice to watch, right?
I think it's kind of part of the problem of making music biopics, especially when either the person themselves, like Bruce Springsteen in his film last year, or the family, like in this instance, it's inevitably there's kind of a bit of a, I don't know, a moral issue with telling a story about yourself or about your relative, because you're always going to be protective over that. I'm willing to not necessarily distort the truth, but put like a nice fictional blanket over the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure this film does. And like, I think they shot like the whole third act of the film and then gutted it and got rid of it entirely, which somewhat was starting to explore some of the things he did later in his life. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the potential second part, because, you know, when they cross into that, that is kind of the main story about Michael Jackson after that point is about the allegations and what he may or may not have done.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they'll do that, because, I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't say, but certainly a lot of the commentary about the film is like, it's kind of like hero worship.
Yeah, and so hard to make a balanced film, like you say, Sam, with the involvement of the person, or in this case, the family. So if you watch something like, I know it's not the same, but have you ever seen that film about Dick Cheney called Vice?
Yes.
Yeah. Very, very good film.
Very good film.
Understandably, Dick Cheney wants nothing to do with that. Mm. So you then have the other side of the coin where you don't know how realistic all of it is, because you almost need the person or the family to have input to know that it's kind of true.
Yeah.
But then it gets really sugarcoated. And if it's not got somebody close to them involved in it, it's kind of guessed at. Mm. So it's really hard to like do both, isn't it?
Yeah.
Push and pull.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I think some of them do it much better than others. I think, well, we'll talk about Rocket Man in a minute, but I think that one is an instance where, I mean, Elton John didn't commit like crimes or anything, But I think it's more willing to touch on his complexity,
yeah,
even though he's directly involved in it,
yeah,
than other films of a similar nature. I mean, yeah. The Springsteen one, for example, last year, really was pretty surface level.
Yeah. It's also, that Springsteen one is asking a lot of people, you know, like the making of one specific album from ages ago over almost but not quite real time. It's
that was all that one, but
it was fine. I mean, you know, good performances and the music is good, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think it's not always enough with these types of films.
I've just to jump the gun a bit, I think Rocket Man is great, but the last great biopic for me is 8 Mile. And that was like early 2000s.
I was just going to mention 8 Mile because it does it so cleverly because it's about him, but not quite about him.
Yeah.
So he basically, Eminem basically plays
directly involved
himself. But not quite himself, which is a really good. Yeah, 8 Mile was excellent because it's kind of 90% autobiographical, but 10% happily made up because it's about a fictional character. Yeah, really good. Really, really good. Johnny Cash one's good as well. The Walk the Line. Ray. They've seen that.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Although Ray.
Ray, yeah.
Jimmy Fox. Ray plays.
He won an Oscar for that, didn't he?
Yeah, although I haven't seen it in ages.
Yeah, that is good.
And I also forgot who was playing. Why am I forgetting that?
Say again, sorry?
I'm also forgetting, like, who's the artist.
Oh, Ray Charles.
God damn it.
Yeah. That's very good. And that's another tricky thing, is like, in Ray, it's almost distracting how good Jamie Foxx's impression of Ray Charles is, to the extent of, like, this is like watching a fun YouTube video where someone does an impression of someone that's really good. It's almost like so good that you can't take it seriously, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, when it's like the impersonation is like such a massive part of it. It's like, are you acting or you do it? Yeah, it's like the difference between acting and just impersonating someone's superficial mannerisms.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Because didn't famously the lad who did the Elvis, the Baz Luhrmann film,
he kind of
got stuck as Elvis. Like he had he was talking like Elvis
for about two years
and like
interviews and stuff.
That is just, what is that? I felt for him there. That's so mad.
I'm going to say the line out loud, but it reminds me of Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, yep, he went full in.
Yeah, Tropic Thunder, one day we should discuss that. First of all, very funny film. Second of all, I don't know how it's escaped being seen as problematic, but it seems to have escaped.
Yeah, it really has.
If you watch it, it is potentially one of the most offensive films ever made.
I think that they're all the butts of the joke. But
I'll tell you what we will talk about is Rocket Man. Mm. We all had a watch of Rocket Man for our watch along. I thought, first of all, good film. Mm. I thought I could have enjoyed it more. Mm-hmm. But what I did think was a bit to touch on your point, Sam. I thought, fair play to Elton John, because for two reasons. One, he didn't really go too easy on himself. He kind of showed his own naiveties and selfishness and times when he hasn't acted great. And, you know, so he kind of gave you the whole thing. Mm. It didn't always look great to be Elton John. But also, he clearly thought, I don't just want to do a straight Bohemian Rhapsody one where the end is Taron Egerton doing my hits for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's kind of quite fantastical and whimsical, there's like musical scenes in there. And for reasons that do become clear at the end, Taron Egerton's doing the AA sessions dressed as, I think, a chicken.
It's like a devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, creature.
But yeah, he's sort of gone for it in quite an interesting way, which I thought was quite brave. And Robbie Williams obviously tried to do the same with his chimpanzee thing, which I haven't seen, but
Felt
like a bit too much for me, that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rocket Man, Roberto, let's start with you. What did you make of it?
Yeah, so, because I was quite quiet in the Michael segment. But I'll say my general opinion on music biopics is on the kind of negative side. Why not? I kind of hang out with my like taste of films and I kind of like look over my shoulder and the music biopics hanging out there and I kind of get a sneer at them and then turn around again. That's kind of my because I think there's a lot of like complexities that you have to account for when making a film about a real person, and I think a lot of these films really dance over it or you know, in some cases, you know, yeah, especially with like people who are living or are dead, there's a lot of things got to dance around. I'll say right now, don't ever watch that Amy Winehouse one they did.
Oh, go back to Black
Duels. Yeah. that, oh, yeah. Anyway, that's another conversation. But yes, I had heard Rocky Man was kind of one of the exceptions to the some people's rule. And I did, yeah, generally, I think I enjoyed it. Yeah, I think the obvious thing to bring up is the musical sequences, right? Because it's basically a musical, you know.
I quite enjoyed those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun.
It definitely helps make like all the time skipping feel a bit more natural. Because I think that's another problem when you're constantly jumping like 10 years ahead. I think like the structure of these films can, and the journey the characters go on can feel a bit like messy and just kind of up and down and all around. Whereas I think when you kind of do use the artist's songs in a kind of a narrative way to kind of show a certain point of their life, yeah, there's more of a connection there I think you can make. I think that one did this fairly well. I particularly think out of all the sequences, the Rocky Man sequence is pretty good where he's in the pool.
Mm.
I actually quite like the Tiny Dancer one as a kind of narrative. That was good. And yeah, I thought, yeah, it's got Taron Egerton's good and also not distractingly trying really hard to be
doing an impression, is
but he is good in it, and they've done little clever things like he's got a little gap in his tooth like Elton John. He looks
the part,
a bit like Elton John, but not crazy like Elton John. Yeah.
First tangent of this as well, by the way. Why is it Taron Egerton keeps crossing? I guess it is because they look similar, but famously he also performed I'm Still Standing in the Illumination animated film Sing.
I've got a theory about this.
He was also in Kingsman as well.
Yeah, because so here's my theory on all these three things tying up.
Yes.
And this is completely a theory, which may be a word that
looking
we won't
say. Looking forward to hearing
it. I think he sings in the I'm Still Standing, and he kind of surprised everyone because that's, as a man who's watched that film a lot, that is the kind of standout bit when you first watch that film. Elton John has young twin boys. I expect Elton John saw the film, was like, not bad.
Mm.
Maybe he's the guy because, and then I think they were already talking about Rocket Man when he was doing Kingsman.
Yeah.
And Taron's just like, why don't you come and be in Kingsman? This is my theory because I know what you mean.
That's very sound.
There's a weird kind of crossover of Taron Egerton and Elton John over like a decade of different things. But that's my theory on why we get those things happening. Because for people who haven't seen it, Kingsman 2 is, I'm going to say, slightly over-reliant on the joke that Elton John is in it quite a lot.
So
it's funny to see him, first of all, because you never see him as coming in the film. So he appears, but then he appears quite a bit in it for reasons that aren't that clear.
It's extremely random, and it would make sense if they were like, oh, Elton John, do you want to be in Kingsman? He's like, yeah. And then they just airdropped him into the script.
Yeah.
And it really does not fit at all.
No, it doesn't.
I think Nick dropped on us earlier as well. This film's produced by Matthew Vaughan, who directs the Kingsman films. So there's also all three of them probably had a combo there.
It's all going on,
and they could just be friends outside of the movies. Yeah. You know,
that'd be nice. I like the idea of that.
Yeah, so there we go. Mystery solved, or maybe solved. But yes, I think overall, yeah, he really carries the film. I thought. Richard Madden popped up.
Very good.
I was like, who is that? Oh, it's
Game of Thrones guy.
Poor guy.
He's good in it. And that's quite interesting because that's a real guy.
Yes.
Presented badly. Oh, let's be honest. Like, he's terrible in it. And that's that must be quite nice if you're Elton John. Because first of all, Elton John's got money that he's not scared of people's lawyers. And he also, that's a nice bit of revenge, that, because he's, you know, however many years, like 40 years later, after he feels wrong by this bloke, this actual bloke is portrayed by name as being just one of the worst people you've seen in films recently.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of catharsis in that, as is. Again, that's where the problem of like, how 100% true is all this, like, people involved, blah blah blah. But I think my caveat with the film is I felt it was quite anticlimactic. Like, I think the point where it ended, I was a bit like, okay, one, I've seen this kind of journey before. A lot of the biopics kind of tackle the drug, you know, Alcoholic Anonymous kind of cycle. And then that's kind of the end point. Better Man did as well. But obviously that came afterwards. But it just felt like when when we kind of had that moment of like the I think the I'm Still Standing like music video recreation's like cute. But then when it just ends there, I was a bit like, oh.
Yeah, it's a bit... Mm.
A thing about... Sorry, to go to make an argument about that. A lot of the films you see that have these addiction cycles, they don't go to rehab until three quarters of the movie. This starts in therapy.
Yeah, that's right. It's him marching down the hallway, isn't it?
I feel as though that, not perfect, but definitely something...
Along a lot, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's actually a relative conclusion, considering he wanted to kill himself and, like, things like that. You know, it was a destructive path starting from, and it's like, you know, oh, take me back, go through the childhood thing. Even to a degree, that's why I think the dream sequences or the musical sequences work, even with the skip, because you could be like, that actually could just be an alcoholic or drug fever dream, like...
Well, yeah.
You know.
Also, this is another interesting challenge for biopics, right? Some of them have a lovely natural end date. So, Bohemian Rhapsody ends with Live Aid performance. You know, like, there's some of them... That's another challenge, because people's lives don't end neatly, especially if, like Elton John, they're just alive now. Exactly. You know, so some of them can end with the end, but Elton John's just alive and kicking as we speak. Making Judy Dua Lipa or whatever. That's another thing with music biopics. Like, how do you, what do you pick as the end?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I agree with you. Rocket Man, it kind of drifts and sort of mists out a bit. Mm-hmm. But I guess because it's about a person who we all are very familiar with, who's still just around and about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite like tidy, I think. Mm. Like a very like neat narrative to have that like device of kind of cutting back to him and AA and stuff. I think it works for me, I thought the first hour was really pretty strong and it really kind of moved quite well, but then the second hour when it gets into that kind of familiar territory of his addiction kind of taking over, it's like, you know, we've kind of seen this before. This is what happens in Bohemian Rhapsody to an extent as well, and lots of these biopics. It's like, okay. And it really kind of goes on for a while. So it's kind of like a foregone conclusion about where it's going to end up, because we know that he's still alive and everything.
I think the bit that really feels like dropped in out of nowhere, and again, I guess it did happen, so they've got to touch on it somewhat, but when he has his marriage to... I don't know. I didn't know about this. He marries a woman called Renata. And then obviously one of the massive aspects of the film is that he's gay. And actually, the way they touched on that, how it was, you don't necessarily get those kind of scenes of people being outright homophobic. But his family in particular, his mum and dad in particular, really kind of just neglect it, almost just kind of brush him under the rug, even after he's achieved all of his fame and through most of his artwork. And how that kind of really feeds in of how, like, his mum says, you'll never properly be loved, which was, like, I might have actually been hit harder than, like, just, you know, like, a scene of her outright just, like, disowning him, I suppose. Like, the way she said that, it was like, oh. Mm. And that kind of being the narrative of how the reason this is all happening is because he doesn't feel the love. I found that was actually quite, I was surprised. That surprised me. I was surprised they touched.
Yeah, the kind of childhood early scenes are nicely done and kind of moving. Also, that is something that I always enjoy from any kind of biopic, is because it's something I'm so fascinated by, that at some point Elton John is just a teenager in Pinner High Street. You know what I mean? Like, he's now someone who is recognised the world over, has Lord knows how many millions of pounds, how many houses and all this, and he's just world famous, absolute megastar. I went to see his final tour, me and Jen went, it was very good because you know all the tunes or this. I do find it fascinating that at some point, you know, it's a hell of a journey, isn't it?
To go
from like Watford, waiting for the bus in Watford to whatever it is he is now. Like, I find that unbelievably interesting.
I think that relates also in a way where, I know it's just a piece of film dialogue where he's doing the blues with like the Detroit players in these clubs, and one of them says to him, you have to kill the person you're born to be the person you want to be. And I think that ties in a lot of what happened throughout, you know, that sort of comes along with sort of maybe becoming a persona that he thought he had a handle on, or like wasn't too much of a challenge because he was like a really good instrumentalist and singer. And then with the encouragement of his manager and the sort of debauchery, I suppose, if you want to call it, for lack of a better word, around that and the drugs, he just became too much to handle.
And it must be weird, right? Because you go on that journey, but what's that phrase about, like, days are long, years are short, whatever? Mm-hmm. If you're Elton John, this is getting a bit existential, but you must look back at Reg Dwight, who was him as a 21, and you're like, what? Yeah. Which one am I? What even happened there? Like, yeah, I'm just in my kind of Tuscan villa with the Beckhams popping around and a boat and a helicopter. You know, you must be like, what? Which one of these even am I now? Like, it must be.
I really emotionally resonated with that towards the end, where he was looking at his parents while in AA and sort of talking to them.
Mm.
And then talking to the kids. And I got to admit as well, I got really teary-eyed at the beginning with the kids, because it was just one bit of the dialogue. It was like, when will you hug me? That just really hit me as well, in my own sort of way. And I think I've probably enjoyed maybe a little bit more than you guys did, or just related to it a little bit more in some respect, in one way more than another. I still think it has maybe some sort of criticisms in there where, I don't know, it's not really punching to be more than your average. At the end of the day, it's still sort of a music biopic level.
Yeah.
It's in the list, but it's like that.
Yeah, it's almost like, I know what you mean, it almost feels a bit like they didn't aim for it to be that big or that amazing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, I want to tick this off. I want to get one done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It hits all the beats you'd expect. The way it goes about them is maybe more to your taste than, you know, your straightforward ones or if you like that expressionist aspect to it. But then, you know, there are people who probably just enjoy, like, give me it in order.
Yeah, and also he's got enough fans. And there's a thing that it does matter with biopics, right? Everyone, even grudgingly, would agree, like, he's earned a biopic. Do you know what I mean?
At
no point is anyone questioning why there's one being made. He's earned the right to have one done.
Yeah.
So. But I know what you mean. It's kind of interestingly, not indie film-like, but it was kind of quite low-key for a very, very, very wealthy man's final flourish biopic.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely, like, I think it's definitely like the top echelon of these kinds of films, because it is trying to present an actual story. How much of that is, I mean, and it is obviously his life as well, but they've packaged it very nicely as like, this is a story and you're seeing this man kind of evolve and become the person that we know him as. Whereas some of them are like, you know, going to watch a concert basically. And that's fine as well, because people enjoy that. But this, I think, strikes the balance.
Tried to be different.
Really well. Tried to be different, and I think it achieves it nicely.
I think we will definitely do a podcast at some point in the near future on biopics. There's a lot to say, and there's a lot of them to talk about. And also, somebody must have been first, right? Like, I don't know who, but at some point, somebody did one, and it obviously went okay. Do you know what I mean? Because now they're pretty common, but
copy and paste. Copy and paste.
Yeah.
No, that's a good question.
Do you know what I mean? Like, in fact, I'll tell you when we'll do one. We'll have the first of the four Beatles coming out at some point.
There's four of those.
Yeah. That's it. That's a whole other conversation. Because I am a big Beatles fan, as loads of people are.
Can I watch all four?
Well, it's asking quite a lot, isn't it? But again, if they're good, they're good, right?
Well, no one's watching the Ringo one.
No, but then this is the thing. You'll watch the Ringo one. And the Ringo one will actually turn into an animated film in the Yellow Submarine style. And you'll be like, whoa, look at this. All this coming.
Funnily enough, I know we're completely on tangent now. But Mikey, who's a projectionist at the Odyssey, says that Ringo will be the first. So you get it out of the way. And then it introduces
Do you think
conclusive narrative into the next one. So it's sort of like
that drip feeding them in, like best. Yeah, that's interesting. So you think it's going to go Ringo, George,
yeah, exactly,
John Lennon, and Paul. Then probably timing wise, they might be cynically hoping that Sir Paul maybe doesn't. Yeah. Well, I'm just
saying. I don't
know.
Depending on what their schedule was like, it probably will come out like, I don't know, one every year.
Yeah. Also, a guy, again, you're right, this is a tangent now, but that's fine. Like, there's been, they are weirdly entering a slightly competitive Beatles-y saturated phase. So if it'd come out like 6-8 years ago, I think people would have been just beyond excited because you just haven't heard from the Beatles for so long. There's still this huge source of interest for people. I've watched the thing on Disney. I don't know if any of you have, but the Get Back documentary. Yeah. First of all, it's amazing. Oh, yeah. Second of all, it is so unbelievably up close and personal with the Beatles, which kind of felt like they felt like these sort of mythical figures before. Now they feel very known. Mm. Paul McCartney's got a new album out that he's really promoting. There's been a kind of another documentary by the same guy who did Get Back, Peter Jackson. So it's almost like competing with other Beatles recent things for people to still be interested a bit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
That Yesterday film as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Paul had a documentary just come out called Man on the Run.
I watched it. Really? It was an hour too long.
Oh, yeah. That was about Wings, though.
Yeah, it was about him and Wings. It was 2 hours long. Genuinely, it's an interesting thing what he did after the Beatles. It's not 2 hours worth of interesting, I'll tell you that. But yeah, okay, so yeah, Rocket Man, we're saying good effort.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Enjoyed it. If you've not seen it, watch it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
I agree. Yeah, and credit to Elton John, come a long way from the streets of Pinner.
Yeah. What do we think of Bryce Dallas Howard as a English lady?
The accent wasn't awful.
It went in and out.
It wasn't awful, but why was it her?
Yeah.
I don't understand. It was a funny bit of casting.
Mm. Also, his dad looked like Neil Patrick Harris, so I...
Oh, my God, I thought it was Neil Patrick Harris.
He really did. Yeah, he really did.
Yeah, Rocket Man was the first movie I had a shift on at the Odyssey as well.
Really?
Oh, was it? There you go.
There you go. Full circle. Circle moment.
Damn. There's two parallel... men blooming into great lives. Love it. So Rocket Man, good film, well worth checking out, and well done Elton John. You seem to have done very well for yourself. We'll come back in part three to find out what's coming up, and we've got an email address to give you.
Yeah,
it's only taken us 2 years or something, but we've got an email address you can actually get in contact. And if you are those America listeners, I beg you, please be the people to email us. We want to know who you are. Right, we're back in part three. Hello and welcome back to part three of the Podyssey. And if you were wondering how sad we are about films, in the actual break bit there, we were just talking in depth about The Lion King and the live-action Lion King films, which aren't even up for discussion today. That's just what we happen to do in our spare time, which is frankly a bit depressing. But, chaps, what have we got coming up in the next few weeks at the Odyssey? Nick, let's start with you.
So I'd really like to highlight a British film. On Tuesday the 19th at 7:30, we have a film called Rose of Nevada. And this is made by a guy called Mark Jenkin, who is from Cornwall. And he has made a few films, Bait, Ennis
Men. I saw
it.
Bait's excellent.
Yeah, so that was a black and white movie. And Ennis Men, I believe, is similar in the way that he uses real film. This one is shot on 16mm stock. And it's just really fascinating in the way it's made as well. And also the story about a time-travelling crew of seamen who go out for fish and then come back to port, and they've travelled back in time 20 years to the 90s.
Oh, I love it.
And it's all about them sort of getting back to their own time. Also, yeah, technically, it's filmed in this camera, which also, I think it's 24 seconds, but they're like 24 seconds per take. And so they had to film everything in like small doses no audio equipment.
So every take is 24 seconds and it jumps?
I don't know if every shot exactly is 24 seconds, but the camera roll literally only had 24 seconds or so, like a limited amount of time on it. So much so as well that there was no audio equipment available to like use with the camera. So every single bit of the film has been dubbed over in the studio, including the dialogue between two guys, which is Callum Turner.
Yeah, it is Callum Turner. Yeah, yeah. And
George McKay as well. Yeah. I love George McKay as an actor as well.
Which one's it? What's George McKay in?
1917. It's like the tall guy. He's the guy.
He was in Pride as well.
For those listening, I'm currently Googling George McKay. Talk about yourself. Is Canton. He Bromley in Pride?
Yeah.
The kind of young lad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. He's very good.
He is good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's him. I know exactly who you mean. Yeah.
Captain Fantastic as well. I don't know if anyone's seen that film. He's in that.
Yeah.
I think. He's the son. Or maybe I'm mixing up two actors.
No, he's in the sun. Yeah. And Callum Turner was from The Boys in the Boat and all those ones.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's really creative, that guy. Like, Bait was excellent. It was clearly unbelievably low budget.
Yeah.
Kind of mad, but in a really engaging, interesting way.
Like, and I appreciate the fact that it's like, he's pulling really interesting original stories into something which is truly independent as well.
Yeah.
And he's gone like through the coast to premiere this movie.
And he's thinking,
like,
what else can I do with these fishermen?
Yeah.
Let's send them back inside.
Exactly.
What's a cool time to go back to?
It's great. 90s. It looks like, you know, the colours in it as well. It looks like looks like you're watching a VHS.
What's that called?
Rose of Nevada.
I'm 100% going to come and see that. That sounds fantastic. Yeah,
come and check it out.
Must be. Yeah, no, I definitely will. Roberto, what's coming up?
Yeah, well, we're taking a flight, guys, because you've started in a... Cornwall is that where it takes place?
Cornwall.
And we're going on a flight. We're going, as always with me, we're going to Japan.
I knew it. I knew it.
We're showing on Monday the 18th of May at 7:30, which actually is it 7 o'clock? 7 o'clock, because it's a long film. It's called Kokoho. This is apparently the highest grossing live action Japanese film of all time.
Mm.
It's about a kabuki actor, or in fact a character who is the son of a yakuza, a Japanese gangster, training to be a kabuki actor, which is essentially a Japanese traditional theater, he's an actor who dresses up as a woman, kind of. Don't know if you've probably seen it before. It's hard to explain, but like, you know, when they dress in like the kind of traditional Japanese garb, like white
with the white face and the hair pulled back. Yeah, I know this.
So it's kind of this epic story about this actor who, in the trailer, actually does a really good job of kind of explaining how kabuki is like a generational thing, and usually kind of it's like a family thing that you get into it through, but obviously he's a son of a gangster, so that's a bit of a conflict there. And it essentially looks to be about this actor kind of really pushing himself to become the best kabuki actor. And I think there's a part of the trailer that gave me a goosebumps, actually, where he's at a shrine praying, and this girl's like, oh, are you praying to God? And he's like, no, I'm asking the devil to make me the best. And in the trailer, she says, what did he say? And he says to her, he said, all right, it's a deal. And then so the trailer ends. I was like, that kind of really like made me go,
fair
okay.
play, that's good. That's good.
So yeah, it looks to just be a really interesting story about, like, obviously a very kind of interesting bit of, you know, classical art, and obviously from a culture that's very like a very rich culture. So yeah, I'm quite looking forward to see that. And now we're getting back on the plane. We're flying a bit closer this time. We're going to France for... I don't know why I'm making this all...
I'm into it. This is production. Yeah. I like it.
You could also get to these places by ship as well.
Yeah.
You could. It'd take longer, but yeah. You could if you want the scenic route.
We'll see you there.
Sunday the 24th of May at 6:30. We're playing a classic. We're playing Amelie.
Mm. Oh, what a film.
Celebrating its 25th anniversary.
No way.
If you've never seen it, it's Audrey Tautou as this... I don't like using the word quirky, but a quirky girl.
But it is quirky. Like, that is, if ever there was a film that was, it's overused now, but it is the original quirky film. It's quirky. Yeah. It's very good.
And she kind of goes on, on a odyssey or a kind of little kind of episodic adventure of trying to help people like connect with others, and in the process hoping to connect with someone herself. It's a really sweet film. It's actually quite rude, a bit raunchy, but actually it's still really sweet. Yeah, exactly. but like, no, it is a really sweet film.
It's a really nice film.
Yeah, well worth a watch, and just a really good bit of entertainment as well. It's like, I think there's a kind of bastion of foreign classic films that obviously some fall into the more like artistic, more high maintenance viewing category. Whereas Amelie's kind of in that thing of you can actually just pop this on and...
Oh, 100%. It's not tricky. It's properly just fun to watch, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. So if you've never seen that before, do highly recommend coming here. You won't leave. You'll leave with a smile on your face.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are my... And then we'll go back to England, maybe.
We're going back to England.
Nice.
Back on the plane. No. Eurostar back to
okay,
England.
Okay, okay.
And then a boat, because it's the Wicker Man I'm talking about.
Oh!
On a very horrible island in the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah. The Hebrides, yes. Somewhere.
So in the Wicker Man, there's this kind of paganistic island, and a policeman goes there to look for a missing girl and discovers this crazy culture happening around May Day.
It's an unreal film, this.
It's absolutely unreal.
It's good. It's very
really,
good.
Really good. Very
mad,
unsettling.
As you like. It's so good.
Yeah. That is part of our film club that we do every month.
Is it? When's that showing? When is that?
23rd. Day before, Emily?
Yes.
I think. Yeah, 23rd at...
I'm going to try and come to
1 p.m., I think.
Come to that. That is such a good film.
Great.
Yes. Yeah, highly recommend coming to watch that. And if you don't know, our film club, we every month pick a classic film and then we have a discussion about it afterwards. So that is our May choice. And then June is Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is Peter Weir's first big film. He made The Truman Show as well. This is a really great film. It's about... A lot of people think that it's a true story, but it is actually based on a novel. But the film presents it as if it's a real story. It's about... this group of girls who are at a boarding school in the Australian outback, and they go and have a picnic at Hanging Rock, which is this kind
the
of it's this like indigenous Australian Aboriginal, I should say, kind of site that has been kind of taken over by the colonists. And that plays into the story to an extent. And one of them just vanishes. And antics ensue from there. It's very it's just a bit of a nightmare of a film, and you don't really know what's happening, and it's very uncomfortable.
Good name as well. Pretty good. Hanging Rock, it's a good name. But yeah, The Wicker Man, genuinely unsettling, mad, funny, both deliberately so and accidentally so, but well worth a look, The Wicker Man. It's crazy, but it's good.
That's good.
Good music as well. As well, I remember
it is really good music.
Soundtrack.
Yeah.
I actually read a book about The Wicker Man because I watched it and I found it so fascinating. Because it's such a curiously strange film. And it's one of those that at the time just everyone hated it. People who were in it hated it. You know, studio hated it.
It's a call up Dustin to see what he says about it.
Yeah, he'd have something to say. Yeah,
well,
definitely.
It came out the same year. It was actually the same year as Don't Look Now, and was the kind of B film that you'd watch. So if you watched a double bill of Don't Look Now starting, and The Wicker Man was the B film you watched afterwards.
You should get him along to the film club. I bet he'd have some great stuff to say about that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, look, some excellent stuff coming up as always. Thank you so much for your company, chaps. And Sam, I'm hoping we'll be able to keep you involved.
Yes, I hope so.
We'll just have to. Yeah, definitely. But I think let's let Sam give everyone a little goodbye, and then we will head off to the pub for Sam's Leaving Drinks, very excitingly. So, Sam, take it away. And the rest of you, we will see you on the next Podacy.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Everyone, to be a part of this podcast for the last year and a half or so. I love chatting about films with you guys. It's been great. And working at the Odyssey has been a real pleasure for the last couple of years as well. I want to give a shout out to my girlfriend Charlotte and her mum Catherine, who are amongst our most devoted listeners.
Oh, hello. Yes. Hello. Welcome. Thank you, Charlotte, for listening.
Thank you very much for listening.
We value you nearly as much as the two mysterious Americans who we know listen.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And you'll be missed, Sam, by all of us. Not least because you're the man who gets things done. You have, in a final act, set up an email, finally, for people to contact the policy. So, if you want to contact the policy on absolutely anything, I mean, ideally film-related.
No nudes.
What was that?
No nudes.
Yeah, well, you say that. It's contact.podacy, P-O-D-Y-S-S-E-Y, so Odyssey with a period, contact.podacy@gmail.com. you want to tell us about how you're finding any of the films, how you find the show, anything you'd like to talk about, any questions for the boys. And that was Sam's legacy. The Sam's email is the legacy. So look, Sam, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you again here in the studio. Thanks all. Bye-bye, boys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, Sam.